Okay. Well, we opened the store, and we just barely had enough merchandise to make a start. And as I probably mentioned before, there were no commercial goods available. We had to scrounge for what we had. So started out used goods that we refurbished and sold because you couldn't buy any new.
I better interject something here. This is Mr. Dick Tuttle, the finish of his interview from 2 weeks ago. Okay, you're on.
Okay. And I may repeat myself because I can't remember exactly what I said. Anyway, we started out in the fall. We'd been about 3 months getting ready. We had a nice store. We had it decorated with peeled slab and so forth, very rustic looking. And it didn't take too long before commercial goods became available again. And I had to decide whether to continue with the used furniture or to just go for new. So we opted for the new because it was a lot less work than redoing some of the furniture I was doing. We managed to hang on by our fingernails there for 3 or 4 years until we had time to work up a bit of business, and as time went on, we were heading for a sporting goods store, but also we sold toys. We sold a lot of toys at one time, and jewelry, and gifts, and just a general variety store. But as time went on, we moved out of our 25. We didn't move out. We expanded from our original 25-foot front into the next store next to us when it became available, and finally into a third storefront, which is the area right across from the Pueblo Bank's parking lot. And I was there for 33 years. As time went by, we established a good business, and in the latter years, we had a comfortable income, and were able to buy a house and buy a car and things that we hadn't been able to do when we were first starting. Along with running the store, I was never satisfied just to do one thing. At one time, I established a wholesale fishing tackle route. I called on dealers within about a 60-70 mile radius and sold a fishing tackle. And another thing that I did just to keep busy was a little inventing. I invented and patented what I call a reel lever. It was an attachment to a fly rod with a trigger up by your trigger finger. Because I always felt that reaching back to the trip lever of an automatic reel was pretty awkward. So with my reel lever, you could just pull the trigger, and I had a cable running through the handle and down to the trip lever, and it worked just swell. I got a patent on it, and I sold quite a few of them. In fact, eventually, Mr. Phillipson of the Phillipson Rod Company bought out my patent and took over, and I got a few royalties until his plant burned down to the ground and he never got started again. So there went my chance to be a millionaire. However, at that time, automatic reels weren't the thing. Spinning was coming on, spin fishing was coming on, and there wasn't too much interest in fly fishing. I think now probably there's a lot more interest in fly fishing than was. Now, I had several other things that I worked on. One was a real nice little deal. I made what I called a hook button, which was a cork, an aluminum back cork with a slot in it. You could slip over your treble hooks and push the hooks into the cork, and they wouldn't tangle anymore. Sold a lot of those. And of course, I had to do everything myself. I bought the presses, and I bought all the materials, and I designed my packaging, and I couldn't turn any of this over to anybody else. So anyway, that eventually died out because, for one thing, lack of interest and the fact that I just was overextended as far as time was concerned. So as I say, we were in the store for 33 years.
Now, what year was this?
I can't tell you precisely. I don't remember exactly. Right around the 50s or 60s that I was doing this. And we continued to run the store, and I say it continued to improve. We changed, I built different counters and all as time went on. I'm getting ahead of myself here, but as I say, on my 65th birthday in 1978, I retired from the county. I was a county commissioner for three terms. I turned 65 where I could take my Social Security, and I had planned to just keep the store, and I had a very good helper, Charles J., who we could always just take off, and Charles would be there to run the store. But I was thinking of keeping the store, and we went with traveling and so forth, but Chuck could always run the store. But anyway, Ed Tauber, the mayor, he and I used to go to meetings together and so forth, and he said, "Well, Dick, why keep the store? Why don't you sell the store and you'll be free to do anything you want?" Well, that sounded good, so I sold the store to Chuck. And Chuck was interested. Well, yeah, I thought, so he was interested. I said, "Well, Chuck, there's no way you can buy the store on what I'm paying you, you know." He got the bank to back him and so forth. And at that time, the uranium exploration was going on, and we were looking for a big expansion. We wondered where we were going to find enough schools and all that to handle all the influx that we expected. Well, anyway, I sold the store to Chuck. And the first year he ran it, he had the best year we ever had. We'd been having every year was a little better than last year. And Chuck was no different. But after that first year, about that time, the climax of my libidinum went out, and we lost our biggest payroll, and Gibson's came in, and eventually Walmart. And Chuck just didn't have the resources to keep it up, so he had to close the store. It was there for about 40 years, and it is no more. So that's about enough about the business. Going back in time then again to the early years, we'll get into politics a little bit here. I didn't have enough to do keeping up the store, so they talked me into running for city councilman. And I don't remember that it was in the 46, 47, 48, somewhere in there. I don't remember the year. Anyway, I was elected to as a city councilman. And at that time, the council met in a downstairs room with a jail right in the back of the meeting room. I can remember the police bringing people they'd collared in and have to elbow their way past the council members to get to the jail. It's quite a little different from now. Anyway, I had never had any political aspirations as far as that goes, but apparently somehow or other, why people figured that I was available for political purposes. One thing that happened was that the postmaster had resigned. And back in those days, it was up to the Republican Party to propose an acting postmaster, and they picked on me to take the job of acting postmaster. It's a lot different now, of course. But anyway, I was having a tough time at the store, and the pay was pretty good as far as that goes. So I took on the assistant postmaster job in the old post office. Okay, the elections came up with Nixon and Kennedy, was it? Was that it? Anyway, who was it? Nixon ran against? Anyway, after the election, now had Nixon won, I'd have probably been postmaster all of a sudden. But the minute the Democratic candidate won, I got a notice that Mr. Burt Mitchell was a postmaster. Strictly political at that time. Well, Burt deserved it. He had been an assistant postmaster. He knew a whole lot more about running a post office than I did. But nevertheless, I had had 10 years of civil service, and not only that, as I say, I was having a tough time making a living back in those days. So that was one thing that happened there with on the political type of thing. Well, then a little later on, the Republicans needed somebody to run for county commissioner, and for some reason or other, they came to me again. Jimmy Sheehan had been the commissioner for, I think, 4 terms, and he was running, I think, it was for his 5th term. And he was a meter reader. Of course, he had an opportunity to go around and meet folks and talk politics and so forth. And however, I had a group of some of the younger citizens that wanted to see some changes made. And so they got together and supported my candidacy. And we had parades and we had speeches, and I wrote articles for the paper, and I put up posters and did all that kind of stuff and went around and knocked on doors. I hated it. And the time for elections came, and we were up about all night because they had to count the votes by hand. And I won by a landslide of maybe 35 or 36 votes or something like that, just barely squeaked in. Okay, that was in 67, that the election, and I took office in 68. Well, at that time, I think the county had been under control of the Democratic Party for years and years. All 3 of the current commissioners were Democrats. I don't think there was a single Republican in the courthouse in those days. I'm pretty sure there wasn't. No, I was the new kid on the block, if I say. Well, they were just finishing the construction of the courthouse annex, the old building, a new jail, and a new courtroom, and so forth. And when I entered on my duties as a county commissioner, the commissioners had no meeting room at all. They kicked Mary Bratton out of her place at the welfare office, and we held our meetings in there. You go in, you close the door, nobody gets in or out. We sit around and chew the fat for a while, and Gene O'Connor calls his filling stations that he was servicing and gets his business for the day taken care of. And then we talk about the roads for a while. And then we go out to Al's out on the King's Corners there and have lunch, you know. And I mean, it was just like it had been for years and years and years. And I didn't have much influence, I can tell you, because I had the two incumbents, the Democrats against one lone Republican. But I do remember one incident in which I kind of crossed. Anyway, I was telling about this little incident in which I, as a new commissioner, I was going down the Highway 285, and I noticed Gene O'Connor's crew over in private property grading a road. And I went over and asked the guys, what county road are you guys working on here? Oh, we're just working where we were told. And I went down, and every crew said, well, what county road are you working on? Oh, we're just working where we're told, see? So Gene kind of called me and said, I understand you've been harassing my crew here, see? And I said, Gene, you had your road crew working on private property, and I don't think that's a legitimate use for county road crews. So that was just a little incident, see? But another little incident there, too. Before I even took office, Jimmy Sheehan's old road crew, they didn't know what to think. They'd been, they were all Democrats too, and they'd been hired by Jimmy, and wondered what I was going to do. They were fearful for their jobs. And Joe Marino was their foreman. I said, Joe, as long as they do their job, they've still got a job. They don't have a thing to worry about. But one thing, Gene and Art Weber, who was the other commissioner from the university, Joe Reno told me, he says, they're taking all the best equipment out of here and they're moving it out to Poncha Springs, which they're just going to leave me high and dry, which is exactly what they did. Mm-hmm. But anyway, as time went on, we got along pretty well. And I learned a little bit about what it took to be a county commissioner, though it took quite a while. Anyway, let's see, there's so many things that have. I don't believe that either Gene or Art ran for office the next year. And so I was an incumbent, but then two Republicans were elected to serve with me, you see. And I was elected chairman at the board because I had some experience. Well, it was George Dominic the third, and George Dominic and names don't come to me. I'll think of it after a while. Anyway, there were the two Republicans. So about this time, things were happening. The county had gone along for years, just like it was back in the 1890s. But the state and the Fed started imposing a lot of things on the counties. You had to have subdivision regulations, you had to have a master plan, you had to have all this. And so from what had been a sleepy little situation, we were just dumped right into all of this this new order, you see. Mm-hmm. And so we were kept busy. When they had finished the courthouse addition, we got the old county courtroom for a commissioner's room. So we stocked it with old tables and chairs and a secondhand typewriter and so forth. And Joe McDonough, who had been county clerk, was our clerk for the Board of Commissioners. A lot of things happened. One being, at the time I took office, county roads were, there was no order to them at all. I think the roads were numbered as they came into the county. You could have county road number one here in Salida County, number two would be up in Buena Vista somewhere, number three somewhere else, wherever they happened to put a new road in. So what we did, we renumbered the county roads, the 100 series, the 200 series, and the 300 series, from the three commissioner districts, see. Another thing, that up to this time, there had been no rural addresses. If you had to find somebody on the farm, you went out to a red barn and turned right, and you'd see a group of cottonwood trees, and he'd be sitting back there. You just had to describe. So we got together with the post office, and by this time, Bob Stotler had come on as an administrator. And a county administrator, and also Donna Nevins. She came on as a clerk, and those two were two of the best employees anybody would ever want to have. And Bob worked with me and on this road numbering situation and all, and he was just wonderful, and so was Donna. I often thought if I just had those two as co-commissioners, I could we could have done a lot. But they helped educate me. They Donna particularly, she was pretty sharp. She's a historian, and she got me out of trouble a lot of times. So let's see, where do we go next? One thing we did. The county had its own hot mix plant. Made our own paving. We had the hot mix plant, the rock crusher, the lay down machines, and all that to make our asphalt. And we paved a lot of roads with good roads. When I first came in, the county roads, they had used what they called penaprime, which was a something to hold the dust down. Mm-hmm. It also made a thin crust. This looked like paving, but it break through. So the county roads were gravel roads with this thin crust, and all these potholes where you'd broken through the crust. See, so paving the roads helped that situation quite a lot, as well as the numbering and so forth. We did. We paved a good many miles of roads, and we had our new road numbering system. Another thing that required our attention was the waste disposal situation. When I first took office, and for many years before then, what you did, if you had your garbage and your waste, and so if you took it out to the alley and burnt what you could in your backyard incinerator, and if you couldn't do that, if you took it out to the dump out the edge of town, and you burnt what was left of it, if you could, we had a hollow out there out the edge of town that was they'd been filling for years, and it just went up a little bit at a time, layer after layer, because there wasn't a whole lot that went in there. But here they come with this edict about no burning. You couldn't burn anything. You couldn't burn leaves. You couldn't burn tree branches. You couldn't burn anything. So you were expected to cover each day's deposits with, I think, 6 inches of soil or something like that at the end of each day, see. Well, it didn't take but just a very short time for what had been building up, this hollow had been building up and still had a lot of room left. It was full to overflowing. I mean, when you start compacting and burying everything that you had been burning, I mean, you got a problem. So we had a problem. We had dumps all over the county. Poncha Springs had a dump. Buena Vista had a dump. The farmers all had their private dumps. And trash was everywhere. So anyway, it seemed to me that that was something that should be a countywide deal. So I talked to Mayor Tauber into conceding control over the dumps to the county. So we took over from the towns, and we established a countywide waste disposal situation. The problem there was, of course, that the people were so used to having a dump close to them. When we went to look for a place to put a dump, not in my backyard, yeah, the NIMBY situation. Well, we finally got a deal with the BLM to put the dump up where it is, up there halfway between Buena Vista and Salida. And of course, one problem there was that people were not used to going 10 or 12 miles to dump, or to pay somebody else. They were used to taking it out to the car. And anyway, we made a deal with the BLM. And one thing that we did, which was rather revolutionary, I think it was Alamosa had a system where they compacted their trash. They had they had machinery to kind of make a mulch out of the waste material, and it came out kind of like papier mache. And it didn't smell. It didn't breed rats. It was you didn't have to cover it. It was a wonderful deal, but it did have some drawbacks. Well, anyway, we decided after looking into all this to install this hammer mill, because there's a whole bunch of hammers that beat this stuff to death, you see. And we built a shed out here halfway between Beauty and Salida, and installed this thing. One problem we had there was that you fed all this, the boxes and the garbage and whatever, into this big bin, and then there was a lift that carried it up, and It had to make a right angle turn. We could back the trucks in, and this stuff that had been pounded would be dumped right into the back of a truck, you see. The only problem was that we took it as far as we could until we hit the end of the building, and then we had to make a right angle turn, and stuff would pile up there, and it would cause things to kind of break down. What we should have done would have been knock a piece of the wall out and run it straight on out, but we didn't do that. And so, well, for the time that we were using it, it was this pulverized material took up maybe a tenth of the area that the unprocessed stuff would. And it was clean, it wouldn't burn, it didn't attract flies, or anything. It was just ideal. But there were problems. There's these hammers that they hammered with had to be all the way the same. So about once a week, they had to take them in the shop and weld them up. And they had a scale there that they had to weigh each hammer, make sure that they were all the same weight, you see. That and that right angle deal. So anyway, of course, you couldn't run old stoves and refrigerators there through there. It was just more the softer stuff. So we still had to use a cat or other tractor. We bought a John Deere, actually made for compacting trash. And it worked so well, and we were having problems with the hammer mill, and we just ended up going to the processing the stuff with this with the tractors, you see. And I think one thing was a problem I can remember. We had a whole bunch of brush loaded on us, and I went by and saw it, and he was expected to compact all that darn brush and cover it with dirt. And I told my foreman, Joe, I said, "Oh, it would sure be tough if that stuff would catch fire, wouldn't it be?" Well, so lo and behold, next morning it had caught fire. And it was all burned up. Fortunately, none of the EPA guys happened to be going by at that time. I didn't tell him to burn it, but somehow or other he caught fire. An act of God, I called it. So anyway, it had its problems, but the building is still there. The in the same location. They've taken on more land from the BLM. One thing, though, that we did differently, we reasoned that everybody that used the landfill, everybody in the county produces trash, and everybody pays taxes. And we just figured that we would make a free to everybody except out of county people, and no charge. You know, they just go dump, see, and we'd take care of them. Well, this had one thing: you didn't have to have somebody there weighing your trash. You didn't have to hire somebody to collect the fees, and it worked just fine. It had so happened that after I left office, the commissioners eventually put on a fee and the weigh stations and all and the charges, and that was their. I had my way; they had their way. And anyway, while this was going in Buena Vista, you know, I was talking about the Salida dumping out of time, and Poncha Springs had one. Buena Vista stuff was right at the end of Main Street. I mean, just a block or so from the last store. And at that time, Main Street was a gravel road. It had been, I don't remember when they finally got it paved, but I'm pretty sure that at that time it was still a gravel road. And they had, of course, they had to come into the county system too. And now the situation, I don't know, it was a terrible thing to have that just right next to town. But I'm sure that when they started hauling their stuff to the central dump, it was a big improvement. One thing that I think I'm as proud of as anything that I might have done was constructing Holman Avenue. getting from Highway 50 up to the Mesa, and all going to Halibut's downtown and then back up to the Mesa. And I'd had it on my mind for some time, but I just was, I just didn't get on it. Until finally I said, well, boy, I'll find out somebody's getting ready to build up at the top there, right where the road would go. And so I said, well, I'd better get on it. Well, Joe McDonough, who was working for her, was a surveyor. So he surveyed the road that now go, you know, now is Holman Avenue. Back in those days, we called it Tuttle Turnpike. But anyway, we got the road through and off Highway 50 and right by the swimming pool and up on the Mesa. And I think that was something that really needed to be done. It was paved and all, and we had to put a little crook in it to make it come out right. But Harry Winter was going to build a home right there where we came out, see. And I hated to do it to Harry, but we said, Harry, that's right where the road's going to come out. And he still had a large patch he could have built on, but he had his heart set on this bigger place, see. So they gave up on that and built his place on two or three blocks on down the road. But let's see, where are we?
When did you get involved with the senior center?
Oh, that comes later, quite a little later. I'll get to that.
Okay. I was just worried about the time.
Okay. Well, we got a lot to talk about here. Let's see. Oh. What was it? Okay, we had this board, George Dominic and myself, and why can't I think of the other one? I know him as well as I have an awful time with names. Bruce Davidson, for heaven's sake. At another election, and we got two Democrats. We got Eddie, was it from up Buena Vista? I wish I could think of the name for what. Anyway, I had two Democrats to work with, see, and they hadn't been in office a very long time when they elected me chairman of the board because I had the experience, see, and I had been chairman most of the time. Eddie Holman and Eddie Krasinski, that was it. Okay, about that time, there was a commercial flyer that was starting a little airline here. And he had taken some of the dignitaries on introductory flights, and Eddie Krasinski, anyway, was on all these flights. The board chartered his plane to take us to Denver for some kind of a meeting, and we had a full load. I think the plane held seven, something like that. And it was a windy day when we went to Denver, and coming back, leaving Denver, I didn't think we were ever going to get enough altitude to get over the mountains, but we finally did. Came into the Salida Airport, and we couldn't land straight in. We came kind of slewing in just at an angle, and because the wind was just terrific. Well, we were scheduled to go to a water meeting the next day down in the Durango area, and we had the president of the Lower Arkansas, Water District, and he had to go attend this meeting, and I should have gone as chairman of the board, but I'd been doing too much. I was getting behind my work. My wife didn't want me to go, And I asked Eddie Krasinski, do you really want to go, Eddie? You've been on two. Yeah, I want to go. And I think if he hadn't said that no, he'd stay home, I think I would have gone. Anyway, the morning they were to take off, early in the morning, Ken Baker, our attorney, called on me and said, Dick, there's a plane down up over Poncha Pass, and I think it may be ours. Mm-hmm. And it was. They had taken off in this terrible wind. They had the weight of a full load of fuel and a full plane load, and they crashed, and I mean everybody was immediately incinerated. And then I lost my board. I couldn't do a thing as a single citizen. So we had to get two more commissioners in real quick, like. Well, the governor was up, Governor Love, and I talked with him and said, I'm going to need some help. We've got George Dominick here, who's already been a commissioner. He could help, but he's a Republican. And the governor said, well, if you can keep your people happy, I think maybe I can keep the Democrats happy. He was a Democrat, of course. So anyway, that didn't work out. Some busybody had to tell him that he thought George Dominick was practically senile. And that did it. The governor said, well, if you can't keep your party together, well, I'll have to appoint two Democrats, which he did. Now this gets, we had Mark Vanderpool, and we had Pat, Pat Slaughter. Well, how much time you got left there?
I'm not sure. I have to learn how to read that. I think it clicked off before, remember? Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah.
We've gone on about close to a good 45 minutes.
How much?
I think we've been going for 45 minutes.
45 minutes. So that's only got how much time on it?
Well, before I think it was an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And we thought that we were told it would be 2 hours. But just go ahead. And if we have to do another one, we'll do another one.
Okay. Well, okay. So here I was, again, I was in the minority. I was the one Republican, was two Democrat. And Mark Vanderpool had been the county assessor, and he was a real nice guy. Pat Slaughter was the judge's wife, and she was appointed. They were both appointed. They weren't elected. But Pat came in there. She was one of these gung-ho ladies that I don't know what they call a woman's lib types, and she was going to straighten that courthouse out, you get rid of the good old boys and all that. So she proceeded to make herself just about as unpopular as you could be. She tried to run the sheriff's office, she tried to run the commissioner's office. When she first came aboard, now, Mark Vanderpool had told me, he says, well, Dick, you're the only one with experience, so we've got elected chairman. He says, I'll vote for you. So it came time to conduct our business and to elect our officers. Mark said, I nominate Dick Tuttle. Pat just liked to hit the ceiling. She thought, sure, there were two Democrats, that we'd have a Democrat. She said, I nominate myself. And she actually did. So we took a vote, and I was elected chairman again with 2-1. Well, anyway, Pat was just a kind of a thorn in my side all the rest of my time there. And I eventually, my third term was coming to a close, and I pretty well decided not to run again. So anyway, that was the end of my career. I would like to say, just away from the county, but in county business, one thing that we accomplished was the creation of the Upper Arkansas Area Council of Governments. The state had been divided into 12 planning and management regions, and Chaffee County was under Pueblo in Region 12. We were up in the Lake or Chaffee or Fremont or Custer County. We knew we'd be the tail of the dog, that Pueblo would get everything. We wouldn't. So we petitioned for a 13th district, and we got it. So we had to form a new council of governments, and several of us commissioners, we got together, and we created the a board. I was the original chairman of the Upper Arkansas Area Council of Governments, and Frank Servey was the executive officer. So we had our own planning and management region, which we have to this day. And I was actually the guy that named it, because we were trying to think of names for it. And, well, it was the Upper Arkansas Area Council of Governments. And that name stuck. And it is continuing a force. During my term of a commissioner, I was, I had several honors that I mentioned. They had
what did I wrote them down? Oh, here's a sheet that fell off.
Okay. Just a few of the honors that I've accumulated. I had to climb up on a step stool to look at my plaque because I can't read them from down below. Anyway, in 1966, I was chairman of the Chamber of Commerce, and in 73 and 74, I was the chairman of the Council of Governments, and also the chairman of the Southern Colorado Economic Development District. And in 78, I was voted Man of the Year, and 99. I got the Cornerstone Award, so that's my bragging. I got these plaques lined up on the wall, and you can't even see them. They're up there, and I had to get up on the steps to them to see what they were for. Okay, that just about covers it. There's a lot more I could throw in,
I don't know how much time. But when did you take over as the head of the senior center? What year was?
Oh, the senior. Yeah, this is another thing I was going to. I retired in 78. When I came back in 79, I was urged to run for a seat on the board on the senior center board. Mm. And I was elected to the board and immediately elected chairman due to all of my vast experience and all that stuff. And I've been chairman of the board ever since for something like 25 years.
Yeah.
And I can't find anybody else stupid enough to take that on or qualify, yeah. So I've been more or less managing the senior center ever since then. I finally got, I just did it voluntarily for a few years before we moved into the building. We got this building built. I was eventually, my job was recognized as director of the center. And then they came on with this rummage deal. It's just a kind of a part-time little deal for some of the ladies. But it held on. And once a week, the ladies get together to sell the rummage. And they tried to make maybe $35 on it. And however, during the week, this stuff comes in, and the little ladies were not here, so I inherited the task of handling everything that came in. And eventually, when the last little lady resigned, I said, this is foolish, because I was doing 99% of the work, or, well, maybe not only 95%, but I'd have to go to the lady who was had been late manager, see? Mm-hmm. And so I appointed myself manager. And I was the only one that had any business experience and so forth. So I built the shelves and the counters and this and that and the other. And more or less, on the basis of my experience as a storekeeper, converted a little kind of a hobby into a full-time business. Mm-hmm. And now we're enjoying the best sales that we've ever had. We're looking at sometimes we take in a couple $1,000 in 1 month, or $500-$600 instead of $35. So, and it pays probably 2/3 at least of the expense of operating this place.
I see.
So, right now I don't know how we got along without it, because I also rent out the center. We get a few $1,000 that way. And then we have some money invested. Those two don't quite cover the entire cost, but we got some money invested, the interest on which takes care of of our needs. And we have substantial investments. And I think we're very fortunate. We don't get any tax money at all. At one time we did get a little from the city and the county, but we don't get anything from anywhere. We're strictly on our own. And we've built this building, and we've kept this up, and we don't owe anybody, and we don't have to have pancake breakfast or anything to pay our bills, see? But we do have to sell a lot of rummage.
Yeah, so this has always been the senior center.
It was built specifically as a senior center.
Okay.
With, in my view, I want it to be a community center as well. I mean, it's basically a senior center.
Right.
But I like to have community events. When they have something that really affects everybody, I do charge for it, but I don't charge for these public interest deals, because, yeah. As I say, I want it to be a hub of activity for the community.
Right.
The community supported us. When we were building this building, we got gifts and we got all kinds of help. So we owe the community. And the community has really helped the senior center, and I think we've helped the community. So,
well, listen, like I say, I think we could just go ahead and run this out, and I thank you very much, Mr. Tuttle, for these two interviews. It's been very interesting, and I'm sure that as it will be into the archives of the library, that it'll be history.
If anybody ever thinks to turn it on.